Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thank you for tuning in to The Business Alchemist with Jackie Minsky. If you are new, thank you so much for tuning in. And if you're with me for a while, thank you so much for coming back. I'm excited for today's episode. I have AJ here with me today. He is a husband, a father, entrepreneur, doctor of pharmacy. He owns multiple pharmacies, but he's also the CEO and founder of Drugstore to Door, which we will be talking about today. And I'm super excited to have you as a guest. Welcome to the Jackie Minsky Show.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So I love to interview entrepreneurs and I really like to pick your brain. So the first question I'm going to ask you is, what made you want to become an entrepreneur, at what age and why?
Very early, the seed was there. Where it really clicked is 16 and 17 years old. I worked for my dad. He did like local irrigation, so residential irrigation. And I worked for him. I think he was paying me a whopping $7 an hour or something at that time. So, and I was out with his crews digging trenches, just sweating my, you know what, off. And after 2 years, I was like, I know how to do all of this. So I went to my dad. I was like, do you care if this summer, my first year of college, do you care if I try to just do it myself? And so I literally taken his invoices, putting stickies over his invoices with the name of my company, going out and trying to solicit a job, you know, as a 17-year-old, 18-year-old kid. And then I landed a handful. And it took me one job to realize I made more in 4 days than I made the whole summer working for my dad. And that's really when it just fired off. And I realized, okay, if I can multiply this and start to do it in different areas. And then that would be the very early point. The realization or the why question is a big one, because I think that comes later in life. Early on, it's like, man, I want sweet cars and a sweet house and I want to live in. And then as you start to age, then you realize like, man, my time is becoming more and more and more valuable. And my big why driver today, why I empower teams, why I scale, do multiple businesses, real estate, pharmacy, banking, all the stuff that I do is, one, I'm a little bit of a psychopath, I guess, you kind of have to be for entrepreneurship. But the other piece was like, how can I buy time back? Like, what can I do to buy time back? And how do I elevate people around me so that we get true synergistic relationships? You know, 1 + 1 = 11, so that you're getting a lot more out of those types of relationships or partnerships or whatever you form. And that's been like that. That's the drug, is like, how much can you amplify yet gain your time back? And that's what I get high on. I mean, I just absolutely love it.
I love that so much. It's so true, you know, entrepreneurship. I do have this question before I go to the next one. Do you think entrepreneurship is something you either have or you don't, or you think you can build skills and become an entrepreneur?
I think people should categorize themselves into two categories. There's an entrepreneur, and then there's what I would say is an intrapreneur. And I've heard the term from somewhere. I forget who coins that term, but it's a very true term. There are a lot of people that I have on my team that are fantastic, but they should not be the guy, the gal, the person. They should not be that person. But internally, the place or the peg or the hole that they fit, they do so fantastic. and doing it with just a tiny bit of guidance and a tiny bit of an umbrella or a team or an infrastructure or a net, they shine so much brighter than they would shine if they went out and tried themselves. There's got to be something in you. There's something, you know, my sister and brother were raised in the same household as me. Sure, you can call it first child syndrome. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. But we're all very different. My sister is my personal assistant. She does fantastic working for me. She would never in a million years want to take on a fraction of what it is that I do. So I think there's some of it that's inherent. And I don't know if it's a genetic component, if it's something early in life that, like, you know, gets you in the brain and your brain chemistry changes and you, I don't know, but I do know I've met a ton of people who want to be the person who want to do the thing. And as soon as it's not fun anymore, like the real entrepreneurship, it's quit time or it's overwhelming or it's too much. So I hate to count people out because I do think there's ways, but there's got to be something internal that's far greater than just the skill set. And that's that psychosis I'm talking about. There's got to be a little bit of nutty factor to be like, I'm going to do this and get punched and get punched again and get punched again. And I'm going to get up and smile about it. So I don't know how well that answered that, but that's where my mind's at.
So with that being said, you know, this is very true. Entrepreneurs are people who they see the bigger vision. They keep going. They don't quit. They don't give up. Right. But to someone listening at home, do you think there's a right time to either A, throw in the towel, B, maybe reassess the business plan? Because if they are entrepreneurs, but let's say something's not working, when is the right time to say, you know what, I need to reassess this business or throw in the towel for this business?
Yeah, there are a lot of factors, I think, that go into deciding when you've maybe taken a left turn, when you're supposed to take a right. I think entrepreneurship is a series of iterations. And so you can't be so prideful or so married that you're not listening to the person you're serving or trying to get to vote for you. And when I say vote for you, give you their money, that's the voting we're looking for, right? Like, we vote with our dollars. We like you, we don't like you. We spend money, we don't. So if you don't have people voting for you, there's something you're either completely off on, you didn't test the market right, or you're slightly off and you need to continue to iterate and get detached from the thing that you were so sure was going to be the thing and slowly start to move it until you see people adopt what you're doing. So sometimes it's just fractional little turns that get you onto the right trajectory. And sometimes, I mean, you're heading south when you should be heading north. And those are very difficult paths. I mean, they are very difficult paths. And so I would say you got to find the line behind, hey, this is the right direction. I'm getting the positive reinforcement. I'm getting the adoption that I think I should be getting for the thing that I'm doing. It's just really hard because there are plenty of days I'm doing the right thing. I'm making money, money's growing, and you want to still quit because you're going, this feels too slow, or this is incredibly hard, or I don't know if I can keep climbing this mountain. And then that voice comes and says, keep going, keep going. If it's the wrong path and nothing's lining up, you know, sit down and kind of rework it. Take it back to a napkin idea and start to test people who don't love you, right? Don't take it back to your inner circle so all your friends and family go, oh, you're so great. You're wonderful. This is going to work. You're going to make it. Take it to people who don't give, you know, two flips, you know, what you have going or not going, or the ones who are just going to try to beat you down so you can start to see the holes in it. And see if you can get people who don't love you to adopt what you have going. So we tend to go too deep. Like, start on a napkin. Like, you can accomplish a lot on a napkin. Like, literally.
It's funny you say that. You know, one of my friends and I, we actually, some of our greatest ideas, we do to the napkin stuff. But with that being said, so let's say there's a young entrepreneur, maybe just someone who's listening to this episode right now, and they're, you know, listening to what you're saying, they're taking in the advice. And let's say now they have a good start, they're making some money. When do you think is the right time to start hiring a team? And what did that process look like for you?
Absolutely. So don't get married to that money. If I could give any advice, it would be you're playing a game of Monopoly. I don't even know if Monopoly's in fashion anymore, but that was the game when I was growing up. Like, you were the boss if you could, you know, pull it out in Monopoly. So I always pretended it was Monopoly money for me. So there's a basic standard of living you need, roof over your head, food, et cetera, so that you're not in crisis mode. And as soon as you get out of crisis mode, don't go buy the house, don't go buy the car, don't go do all the stupid crap. Like, put that stuff in a place where you can start to delete yourself out of the equation and narrow yourself down into more gift, your more gifted path, right? So when I first started, very first business that I had, I wore every hat. Like, I had to do everything. And as I started to generate some income, what I would do is buy myself freedom in areas, right? Like, I don't love doing QuickBooks. That's not my giftedness. I don't get up in the morning and get excited about putting numbers into QuickBooks or running HR or any of that kind of stuff. And so I started pulling people in that did nerd out on spreadsheets. Like, spreadsheets are why they get up in the morning. So I'm going to hire that person. I'm never going to touch a spreadsheet again. I love analyzing them for about 3 minutes, but I want everything perfect and colors and columns, and I can click on buttons. So I would save my money to scale, right? So whatever your level of scale that you're looking for, if you don't realize that money, you'll never feel it coming and going. It will just be a part of the game that you're playing. The minute you realize it, because your mortgage went up or your car payment tripled or whatever it is that you're doing, now you've realized it. And to go backwards is a really hard mental thing for a lot of people to do. So I've always been very frugal on what I live off of and how my lifestyle versus my growth plan.
That is so true, because a lot of, I guess you could say, entrepreneurs nowadays, they have these businesses and they start living off of them, and therefore they don't know how to grow a team or even scale the company because everything is, you know, living money. And I always tell people there's a difference between living money and investing back into your business money. And you have to get out of that survival point to know what is your living expenses. How do you, you know, live it within your living expenses? And then the rest of the money goes back into the business, not into the cars, the watches, you know, everything that newer or younger entrepreneurs who might be listening to this episode, they go for right away with that extra money. When the truth is, if they were to save that, put that it back into the business, what they could accomplish saving that in a year and the team that they could have, it would double, if not triple, you know, that maybe later on that watch would, you know, maybe a higher, you know, maybe a more expensive watch or whatnot. So anyone listening, that is super, super important. So AJ, tell me, what was one of your first maybe failures as a young entrepreneur in business? And how do you think you could have avoided it now as you know everything you do as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, so I kind of had an interesting path. You know, I did the sprinkler business that I talked about. I was heavy into fitness as a young guy. I was a little fat kid and got into fitness and started bodybuilding. So I personal trained. That was another thing that I did. And I learned a lot through that process as well. And then met a guy while I was doing sprinklers that convinced me to go to pharmacy school. So my first real business venture was my second year of pharmacy school. I was ballsy enough to think I should buy my first pharmacy. And so I put together a business. I didn't know crap about pharmacy. I pivoted from dentistry to pharmacy. That's a whole nother story. But so I go to pharmacy, I don't know anything about it. And then I've got enough of that in me thinking I can run a business, I can run a pharmacy. So I'll go just figure it out. So I think I was 20 at the time, maybe. No, 21, 22, somewhere in that range. And went to the bank, put together a phenomenal business plan. So it was this amazing learning curve, right? I figured out how to put a business plan together, went and assessed the business, talked an old owner into potentially selling me this business, went to a bank, got approved for the loan through the bank. And then the negotiations fell apart because of the owner's child, who was a physician in the same town. I say child, he was older than me, but it was the old owner's kid. And so the whole negotiation fell apart. And so it felt like this massive failure, but it was the most incredible learning experience. You don't even take it in. You just think that sucked. That there went that, you know, I had this all figured out. I was going to go do this, this, and this. And then I get out and fast forward, you know, 2.5, 3 years later, when I actually do buy my first pharmacy, I look back at that kid who would have figured it out, but would have got his ass kicked in the process. And I'm like, thank goodness that didn't go through. But how amazing that 21, 22 year old kid was able to go convince the bank to give him a $500,000 loan to go buy a business, who just So there was so much that was learned in that process that when they say you learn from your failures, you learn a lot from the failure, even though there were a lot of successes within the overall failure, right? So there were a lot of these stepping stones that taught a lot. And I have a lot of them. The thing is, at some point you start rolling, especially when you have multiple things going, you don't even look at them as failures anymore. They're just kind of stepping stones in the process, and you expect them to happen. I've had clinics that I've tried to launch that didn't go the way I wanted them to go. I've had, you know, pharmacies that I've launched that didn't go the way I want them to go. But when you look at the net effect of everything I'm trying and doing, it's very positive. And sure, like, you look back and be like, oh my God, I spent $250,000 on that project and I just had to turn it off, like, painful. But, you know, then you look at the other project that's producing that every single year for you. And then, you know, and you start to balance those. So it's an interesting, when it's your first big thing and you're all in, that one hurts. But as you start to multiply, then you like, this is the process. Like, some things are going to work, some things are not. And this is how we're going to get through it. And it's part of the path that I'm navigating.
That is so true. So now we're living in a time of the digital era. And let's talk about drugstore to door. Tell me how that idea came to you. How did you start it? How long have you been doing it? Like, let's talk about drugstore to door, because I think it's pretty much genius.
Thank you. I'll take it. This is a funny story. So everyone's getting to experience me being in it raw now. Started multiple businesses, had multiple successful businesses. I've had some failures along the way. I've built a lot of people's confidence in the process. And as an independent pharmacy owner with drugstore to door, there are about 20,000 independent pharmacies across the United States. I was looking at my pharmacy presence, our websites, how we're marketing, all the stuff that we're doing, and just thought, gee, this is garbage. And I had a marketer on staff, you know, and I'm like, I can't spend money at night, can't spend money on the weekends. I can't accomplish what I'm out to accomplish. Like, we feel like a mom and pop shop. Like, it's not, you know, I can't offer the same utility as a major player in the space. And so we went after what is the CVS and the Walgreens and the Walmarts and the Amazon.coms, like, what do they actually allow a consumer to do when you show up to their website? And then how convenient is it to get your pharmacy services to your door, or if you want to go pick it up or whatever it might be? So we just started to develop. And what we essentially did is said, let's take everything you can accomplish when you walk through an independent pharmacy's door. So prescriptions, over-the-counter meds, anything you can think of from a pharmacy, immunizations, testing, all of the stuff that they do. Let's digitize all of it, make the website amazing. So put designers on the actual site, and then let's link all of these things together. So when a consumer is looking for a need, like, hey, I need this antibiotic, or I need to refill this prescription, or I've got a killer sinus infection, or whatever it might be, and I need to grab something real quick, we take the consumer's location, ping the closest pharmacy that we represent their whole front end on, that whole shopping experience, and push you to them. And so over 75% of these independents already offer delivery for incredibly cheap, if not free. So by pushing you to that closest independent, you know, you could have started the process at the beginning of this interview. And by the end of the interview, if you had a local pharmacy in your area, your doorbell would be ringing with your products that you need.
So you pretty much like, so walk me through the experience. Let's say hypothetically, me and you were sitting on this interview right now, and I have a prescription from a doctor, correct? And then I go on to the drugstore to door. It's an app. And what do? I just enter maybe my zip code, like walk a user through the experience.
Absolutely. You got it. So you don't even have to just go to drugstoretodoor.com, hit the site. It's responsive to anything and every device that you're on. It's going to take your location automatically, populate a map, zoom in around you. And if there's anyone close, you're going to see the closest independent pharmacies to you. And then you can select the location of your choosing. Once you do, you're going to enter their web store. So let's say you had a prescription refill, but for ease, let's say you have a prescription you get every month at CVS and you decide, you know what? I'm not paying CVS. I'd rather give it to an independent. Now that it's convenient enough for me, I'm gonna let the local business take it because my copay is going to be exactly the same. So I might as well just let someone bring it to my door, or I'll swing by and pick it up. So you just go in and select transfer. If there's anything else you want to shop from that store, you've got a full shopping experience. You can add those things to your cart. If you decided, you know, hey, I need to get a COVID booster. You could even add a COVID booster to your cart for, you know, administration when you go, or a COVID test, or whatever service that pharmacy offers, add it to your cart and check out. And once you do, you get the same tracking like you would if you used an Uber Eats or a DoorDash or ordered a Domino's pizza. You get that same tracking status as that pharmacy works your order. And then whatever you selected, so if you selected deliver it to my home, then you'll see, hey, the driver's out to deliver your medication, or if there's any other communication needs to happen in the process, it'll happen in the process. Or a lot just want to swing by and pick it up. So it'll just let you know, hey, your stuff is ready. Swing by and pick it up whenever you're ready.
So it sounds like to me, with everything you just said, even in drugstore to door, you learned from your marketing experience that there was, you know, room for change, you know. So that's a good marketing question. Let's say there's someone who's, again, in a business. How do they know, okay, something's not working? Is it sales? Is it marketing? How can an entrepreneur or founder spot where in the company is the problem? Because you noticed it was marketing, not so much sales. So how did you know that?
Yeah, we have an interesting challenge, right? Because we're B2B to C. So we have to market to the pharmacy to get the pharmacy to adopt the product. We can get the pharmacy, the consumer, right? So it's this long chain, which really gives you two whole different marketing plans, two whole different sales strategies. They're very, very different things. And so as you start to get out there and pump the idea, for the pharmacy or the B2B side, for us to understand what do we need to do, we had to solve real problems for real business owners, right? So we're in a world where you see a lot of this on the news around rising prescription prices and why is everything getting so expensive? And then Mark Cuban comes out and he's got, you know, his cost plus program and all. It's convoluted on purpose. And so the margins are getting squeezed on these independent pharmacy owners. So they're looking for new revenue streams. So that's your aha. Okay. So let's solve some real pain points. How do we drive new revenue streams for the independent pharmacy, right? Because they can service the hell out of anybody. They're fantastic at it. Then the next thing is for a consumer, right? Like, God forbid we put pants on to go get a hamburger anymore. It's like, you know, we're in a different world now. So there is nothing sexy about going to get prescription medications. Like, it's a need to do task. And so what can we do from a customer experience to give the modern conveniences we're all used to, right? We all sit in the customer seat. So ask yourself, how high is the hurdle, you know, whenever you're working on your product? So we identify as just adoption, sales, how good is the pharmacy at actually selling their own product, right? So when you give them all the tools, it's like, hey, here's the whole tool set, go build the Taj Mahal. And they're like, which one's the hammer? You know, and you're like, okay, so here's a whole new problem, right? We got an era of owners who have no clue how to get online and get online effectively. Big hole. Did we account for it when we started? No. Are we solving it now? Absolutely. So as you start to put pieces out, you're like, the product's fantastic. The adoption's great. The sell is there. The close rates are very high. Now what happens post-close? What happens from the consumer perspective? And we'll continue to do this. This is the iteration that we were talking about early in our conversation. It's a constant game of small iterations.
It's always data driven. I always tell people that, you know, the same way a goal without a plan is a dream, is the same way that marketing without data is just content. That's all it is, right? So you sound like a very busy guy. And I want to ask you, do you believe in work-life balance? And if so, how do you manage that?
It's a work-life teeter-totter. There's no balance. It's very hard if you've ever been on a teeter-totter to keep that thing flat, especially if the person across from you happens to weigh 50 pounds more or 50 pounds less than you do. And for me, it's work-life teeter-totter. There are going to be times where you're on the high end of it and you're way out of balance, and then you're on the low end of it and you're way out of balance, and somewhere in between you're catching balance, but it's constant oscillation back and forth. And that's the reality. I have yet to meet anyone who truly finds a balance. I would say I'm as balanced as I could get. And my wife would probably say, this dude's all about work, right? And so it's very difficult to meet because everyone's got their own definition of what balance is. So I think you just have to be cognizant of how much time has what consumed my schedule and where do I need to drive some more attention? Because you have to, it's a journey. There's no end. So for all of you who are listening that think there's a goalpost and you're going to kick the ball through it and then all of a sudden the crowd's going to go wild and this whole thing's finished and then you just go. That's the same hard reality I learned when I went from a fat kid to in shape. I'm like, oh shit, I got to keep doing this. It doesn't just stay after I got here, you know? And so business is very much the same, you know? So you're going to be on this journey for a very long time, especially if you've got the bug. You're not going to put your feet up in a rocking chair. At least I'm not. So you have to find a way to say, hey, when am I out of balance? And I'm doing air quotes here for those listening, because it's just a teeter-totter. So when do I need to push off with my feet so that I get out of this slump and I'm up here and giving a little more attention to this thing? So I don't know a better way to say it other than I'm intentional with scheduling my calendar. And as sad and as great as it is, I schedule family and I have some hard stops and other things that I put in to make sure. And it has to be like a level 10 for me to break that.
Yeah, that is true. I live off my calendar, but I also use a grading system that I'd love to share. Maybe you or someone listening, you know, for work-life balance for me, yeah. Because as entrepreneurs, sometimes we get so busy that the momentum, right? You know, when that momentum comes and we're like mad men or women, you know, like when that momentum comes, you're nonstop. So I learned, you know, there is such a thing as burnout, unfortunately. And when that momentum comes, sometimes we feel like if we slow down, we're going to lose that momentum. So I started using a grading system where at the end of either the week or the day, I go through family, relationships, health, you know, my thoughts, and I grade myself. You know, how much time did I spend with my son this week? How much time, you know, did I spend taking care of my health this week? So for anyone listening, maybe you're, you know, starting as an entrepreneur and you're not really sure how to find that balance, maybe this grading system is something that you can grade yourself once a week, because it is, to me, I think it's still important, you know, especially if we're parents, husbands, wives, you know, that we find that moment to take a step back and not be afraid to slow down, to speed up. But with everything you know today, if you could sit across from your younger self, AJ, what would you say to younger AJ?
As much as I've accomplished, I would still say, don't be a chicken shit and go harder. Like, just go all in. And whatever you think you're doing, 10x it, like just 10x what you think you're doing. And the example I give is when I was a young kid, you know, we grew up modest. You know, my dad did fine. My dad was fantastic at convincing us we were broke. Like, he was Oscar, like, fantastic. And so we grew up very mediocre. We, you know, middle class family, you know, just. But we're always okay. You know, it's not a hard knock story by any means. We had what we needed when we needed it, no question. But I would drive around the nice neighborhoods, you know, as a young guy, and I would look and be like, one day I'm going to live in this house and I'm going to drive that car and I'm going to do this thing. And that's the vision casting, right? Entrepreneurs tend to do that. Like, we really have a good job of putting ourselves into that future self. And then at 32, 31 years old, I hit all of those things that I was vision casting. And I look back and think, what happened if I vision casted 10x that, 20x that, 100x that? How much further, right? Because I would have compressed my timeline and forced me. And I still have a lot of time. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm ramping everything up as I'm going. But I look back, there's no younger legs than 20-year-old legs, and there's no younger legs than 30-year-old legs. And now I'm running on 40-year-old legs, you know, so and still full of energy, but there's still different responsibilities, life changes, all those things. I would sit across from that guy. And one, I would say, thank you for all your hard work. And thank you for not giving up, believing in yourself, doing all that stuff. I would definitely pat that younger version on the back. And then I'd whisper on his ear on the way out, 10x whatever you think you're going to do.
I love that. So let's just rewind for a second, because you called it vision casting, but nowadays we call it manifesting, something that I talk a lot about.
Yeah.
Manifestation. So when you were vision casting, right, did you have some kind of routine? Did you vision cast once a week, or was it always implemented in your subconscious mind? Like, walk me through your vision casting process.
It's my subconscious mind. So I know that there's a lot of like meditation strategies out there and getting yourself to a certain point. And I think Joe Dispenza is a great guy about talking about like living in the success piece of, but for some of us, that's hard to do, right? Like, I love doing it when I have the time to do it, but scheduling it in and making sure I do it every single day, that doesn't happen. That's the other thing I just love to say about all the stuff that's out there. Like, for God's sake, you're not going to get an ice bath every morning and a hot sauna and this and da, da, da. Like, that's not the key to success. I mean, that's what you do after you're successful. So the same thing with the vision casting or the manifestation. It's almost so ingrained that when I'm daydreaming or I'm in between thoughts or I'm thinking about the next business deal or the next step up or how, it's just a part of my mental flow is the after. Like, where am I at after? What am I doing after? It's almost like a picture show in my brain that just takes place. And I've always done it. I've done it since I was a little kid. It's been in me. And it's not just like thinking about it. It's actually like you're there. I mean, you're in it and you're living it. And you actually see that movie playing out. And it's led to a lot of it coming to life. It's almost like you're like, this is deja vu. It's like, no, I was probably just dreaming about this 10 years ago. It's not actually deja vu. Like, I just thought it so hard. Now I'm living it, you know?
So what would you do? Okay. So I love this because, so what would you do, or what would you say to someone listening who's vision casting, manifestation, any term, you know, someone's comfortable with what this really is. And let's say it's not yet in their reality, but their vision casting. I love that you worded it that way. You know, what would you do on the days where you have this vision of yourself, your life, but you don't yet see it in reality? How did you cope with that, deal with that? How would you talk to yourself through those times when you weren't there just yet in reality?
Yeah, that's a great question. This is something I struggle with now, because as a young kid, I played with a chip on my shoulder. Like, I was angry. So I would just use that anger, not angry towards the world, but there was this, I'm going to prove, right? All the people who made fun of me for being a fat kid, I'm going to prove to them when I step on stage and I'm 3% body fat and my little, you know, underwear and do my posing. And the same thing in business, right? Those who doubted I'm going to be successful, I'm going to show them. I'm like, and that drive only gets you so far. And then it's an internal talk, like, show yourself. How do you show yourself? And then you get to a point where life could be comfortable if you let it be comfortable. So that anger motivation starts to change a little bit. And I say all this because you have to take, my opinion, you have to take the vision casting. You have to be settled but unsettled in the thought. There has to be some discomfort in you not being there to seek out getting there, to execute on getting there, to be motivated enough to go do things when it doesn't feel like they're clicking, when they're not working, when it's taking longer, costing more, whatever those things are. There has to be something unsettling. And I'm trying to think of the verbiage. I want to say it's Ed Milet or somebody saying, be blissfully blissfully dissatisfied. I'm butchering it, I'm sure. But it's like, how do you find bliss in your current state, but also have the dissatisfaction to want to do more so that you don't give up every moment you have, but you stay hungry for the moments you want as well? And that's a very hard balance, but you got to have it. I mean, there's a level, like, there's always that fear, like, I go broke again, or I could lose my license, or somebody could sue me, or I could have this, or I could have that. And it's not a great way to live, but it is a motivating way to live, to get up and continue to drive and continue to drive. So manifestation, vision casting, all that stuff is nothing without execution, man. You are not going to bend the universe to your will if you're sitting on your ass. Like, it's not going to happen. So you got to get up and do something about it. And that's when I think the stars start to align for you.
You know, there's a joke in the movie Eat, Pray, Love, where they tell the story and the joke of, you know, a young man is praying to God and he's like, God, I want to win the lottery. I want to win. And he just keeps praying to win the lottery. And then one day God replies, my son, go buy a ticket. You know, it's the same thing. You know, you're vision casting, you're manifesting. Do something to meet in the middle. It's like a relationship. I always tell people, if it's God, universe, source, any term someone's comfortable with, it's a relationship. So if it was whether a friendship or romantic partnership, your manifestation, vision casting relationship, there's a middle. You have to meet in the middle. You have to compromise. You have to work together. So I love that. So AJ, where can we find you on social media?
You bet. So this is all new for me, trying to get public. Man, I was raised to be a private person. And so I'm trying to get my comfort out there. I've got a landing page, AJ Asgary, which is my last name. So that's AJASGARI.com. And that links out to everything. So that's some personal stuff via Insta. We do have a little workout channel where I try to share back, like, just our daily workouts that we do every day, just for the other little fat kid that sees it and wants to go get started, go do it. Some of our business stuff that we have going, we have a pharmacy channel where you can learn tips and tricks about pharmacy all day long. So I just packed it all there because there's a lot of different lanes. And so instead of having an incredibly confusing Instagram, the goal was, let's kind of just set everything up in their own lanes and let people kind of find what speaks to them. So.
And you guys, that's all going to be in the show notes. So if you're listening to this podcast, be sure to go to the show notes. All the links will be in there. AJ, thank you so much for coming on the Jackie Minsky Show. It's been so much fun getting to know you.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Hey guys, it's Jackie Minsky. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Jackie Minsky Show. If you love this podcast, please subscribe, leave a rating, and a review. Be sure to tune in week after week as we are going to be interviewing some of the greatest entrepreneurs on the show in season 3. I'm looking forward to bringing you guys all the tools, tactics, and information you need to help you get from point A to point B, whether you're a startup or you've been in business for several years. Wherever you may be in your career, I'm super excited for season 3 because we're going to be helping you really change your life around. Thank you again for listening. I love you guys.
Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.